Hare Krishna. Welcome back to the Mahabharata character series. Pandavas and Kauravas have assembled at Kurukshetra, and at that time the transcendental novelty in terms of a complex philosophical discussion on a surcharged war-hungry battlefield starts off. So how does this happen and what is the content of this remarkable discussion? Let's discuss that. So as Krishna and Arjuna were in the middle of the battlefield, on their respect, Krishna and Arjuna, they were on their side, the leaders. So this is now the Bhishma Parva, the Parva where, sixth Parva of the Mahabharata. And depending on the recension of the Mahabharata, this is often either the 18th to the 35th chapters, or different chapters, either the 23rd to the 40th chapter of the Bhishma Parva, or 25th to the 42nd chapters, not 18 to 36, 36th. So like that, it is just a few chapters here and there, but it comes basically in the Bhishma Parva. Bhishma is the commander during this period. That's the start of the war to the first 10 days of the war. So Arjuna turns to Krishna and he says, Senayor Ubhayor Madhye Ratham Sthapayam Me Achyuta. Oh Achyuta, please place me in between the two armies. So now Arjuna, he knows this is going to be a fratricidal, a brutal war. And he wants to see, you know, who are the people who have come to fight on the side of the evil-minded Duryodhana Durbuddher Priyachikirishavaha. And accordingly, Krishna takes Arjuna in between. And Pashyaitan Panduputranam Samavetan Kuruniti Bhishma Drona Purmukhtaha. So he takes him right in between the two chariots. And actually, Krishna places him in such a way that Bhishma and Drona are seen. They are the eldest and they are the fiercest warriors. Karna is not there at that time. And naturally, they are the most prominent. Especially in the eyes of Arjuna, because Arjuna is now concerned what all bloodshed I'll have to do and how can I do such a bloodshed? Should I do it? So he knows the cruelty and the evil nature of Duryodhana. So he doesn't have so much compunction about fighting against Duryodhana, but especially his venerable elders. And then he sees not just his elders. Krishna places him right in front of those elders, but along with that he sees a whole array of relatives. Now, right from grandfathers down to sons. Now, he sees Bhishma is a grandfather, but actually there on the Bahalika is also there. And Bahalika is actually not just his grandfather. Bahalika is actually great-grandfather. Bahalika is the brother of Shantanu. And Shantanu is the father of Bhishma. So, it's like his great-grandfather is also there. And then Bahalika's son Bhurishrava is there. Bahalika, Bhurishrava, Somadatta, that whole dynasty is there. And he is stunned. He says, how can I fight against them? So from that side, there are elders like that. And then as you go down, there are equals. Ashwatthama was a friend of his. And similarly, Krutavarman was also a friend. There are many warriors, but especially we are talking about those who are his friends. Krutavarman and Arjuna, they had been together in Drona's Gurukulu. Krutavarman was the general of the Yadus whom Duryodhana approached and who came with the Yadu army on the side of the Kauravas. So he saw that in his generation. Then he saw Lakshmana. Lakshmana was the son of Duryodhana. So he was like a nephew to him. So like that, he saw right from the grandfathers and great grandfathers. So three generations above him, Somadatta, Bhurishrava, they were also both above him, and there are many in his equal generation who are dear to him. Shalya was also in that generation of being like his father. He was his father-in-law. You know, he was related to Madri. So how could he fight against them? And then he had his sons, and then he had his Putran Pautran. So he had his people who were like grandsons also. So he was thinking, how can I fight against all these people? And Arjuna started getting overwhelmed. Now, we may wonder, Arjuna had fought against many of these warriors earlier. At that time, when he had fought them at Virat, there had been confrontations. He had never had a confrontation directly with his venerable elders. Now, when he had fought against the Gandharvas, or earlier also, whenever there had been a confrontation, it had not been directly with his elders, but now it's going to be directly with the elders. So, and even when he had fought at the Virat, he had no intention of killing them at that time. He just wanted to protect the cows of Virat, and he had to teach the Kauravas a lesson in terms of demonstrating the power that they would be up against if they did not agree for peace. But now he knew the situation was different. All peace negotiations had failed, and at the end of this war, one set of generals would not go back home. So this was going to be a fight to a bitter and brutal death. And naturally, Arjuna started getting overwhelmed. His limbs started trembling. His skin started burning. Hair started standing on his head. And then his Gandiva started slipping from his hand. That same Arjuna who had taken a vow that he would never put aside his Gandiva, he found his Gandiva slipping away. And Arjuna started thinking. He says, no, this war will be a catastrophe. I cannot let this war happen. At least I cannot be a part of this war. I cannot be an instigator in this war. No. He started to turn towards Krishna. And he says, Krishna, how can we fight this war? And first he thinks in terms of enjoyment. No. When they had the martial exhibition after completing their education, what did they do? The martial exhibition was for the pleasure of the citizens and also for especially the pleasure of his elders. He wanted to show please Duryodhana, Acharya, he wanted to please Bhishma, he wanted to please his elders. Just see how your sons have become so glorious. And actually whatever we achieve, we want to share with those whom we love and especially those whom we respect. If we can show that what they have done for us, now we have been in some way trying to repay it, there's a great joy to that. So Arjuna started saying that, actually, kim bhogair jivitainava. He says, how will I live with, what is the point of living if those with whom I would like to relish the fruits of success, if they themselves have to die and I have to kill them for that? What is the use of such a kingdom? What is the use of such a wealth? So he felt that it is pointless. And then he started thinking, not only that, he said, you know, they're all elders. How can I kill them at all? So first was from his point of view, how what will the pleasure for me? Whom will I show what I have achieved to? The second was, you know, how can I kill them? They are elders. In their own right, I should be respecting them. How can I kill them? That first argument, there are five arguments he offers. First argument is enjoyment. What will be my enjoyment? Second is, he says, where is the compassion? How can I kill anyone? What to speak of my elders? And then he asks, third argument, he says, if you think that on a war field to kill enemies is okay, but you have to know these are not ordinary enemies, they are relatives. And they are venerable relatives, and if we kill such relatives whom are meant to be, not even verbally crossed. In a cultured society, if some senior speaks something which one doesn't agree with, one may have some differences, but we keep the differences private and resolve them privately. Not that we make a big show to everyone in public. And then those who should not be even publicly verbally crossed, how can he shoot arrows at them? So if I do that, not only will it be a breach of etiquette, there will be a sinful reaction that will come if I kill people like this. And then he said, he was thinking more and more. His thoughts were becoming broader and broader. And he said, just like in the dam, there's one hole. Then there's one small crack as the water comes out. And as that water comes out, the dam becomes weaker and weaker. And more water starts flooding out. So like that, Arjuna started thinking. And he said, how can I fight like this against such venerable elders? So first reason is, okay, what will be the pleasure for me? Oh, but there will be so much pain for them also. How can I cause pain? Shouldn't I have compassion for them? And not only that, he says, in the future, there will be sinful reactions which will come to me also. And he says, after that, okay, it's not just future for me will be bad, the future for whole society will be bad because the society's protectors are killed. Then that society which is unprotected will be exploited. Now, though, there are always people who with unscrupulous interests, and they will contaminate society. If the women don't have protectors, then they will be exploited, and through such exploitation, the whole society will get degraded. So Arjuna is thinking in terms of future generations also, and he says, "Kula gnanam kulas," those who destroy the kulas, such people, they not only create terrible conditions in this world, but they themselves, because they are creating such terrible conditions in the next world, in the future, they'll have to suffer further reaction next world. So because of this, he becomes indecisive. And this is described in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, "Krishna, I cannot fight. I'll not fight." Actually, at the end of the first chapter only, he puts aside his bow. Visrujya sasharam chapam shoka samvigna manasa. That visrujya, he puts aside sasharam chapam. So his chapa and shara, his bow and arrows. And shoka samvigna manasa. His mind is filled with shoka. What should I do now, O Krishna? And as he's thinking like this, he sits down in dejection on his chariot and tears are coming from his eyes. Now for a Kshatriya who sees death and violence regularly, for Kshatriya to be reduced to tears, we can just imagine what a calamitous, what a emotionally wrenching turmoil must be going on in the heart of that person. And at that time, as he's thinking, but Arjuna feels he's in a lose-lose situation. If he doesn't, if he fights the war, even if he loses, that's a terrible disgrace. Because he will probably be killed, or he'll have to live the life of a humiliated person. Most that will not happen. He'll be killed only. Because he will not leave the battlefield. Even if he wins, it'll be like another form of death. Because the loved ones with whom he would like to rejoice in the fruits of success, they would not be there. And still, if he decides, okay, I will not fight only. And that also is a problem, because what will he do? He says that I will live as a beggar, but he knows that is not the proper way for a Kshatriya to live. And would that the way they had already lived as mendicants in the forest? And what had enabled them to live, to tolerate it all, was that, yes, this is temporary. And we will get a rightful kingdom back. Now, would he be right in expecting his brothers again to go back to the forest, and especially expecting Draupadi to endure the austerities of forest life again? So he said, that also doesn't seem right. What should I do? He came to an indecision. And as he was thinking, his mind was just driving him madder and madder, not being allowed to come to any decision. And then one sign of intelligence is to know what to do when we don't know what to do. And he decided that, if we don't know what to do, then how can we know what to do? It means that we should turn to Krishna at that time. If we can't do anything, we turn to God in prayer and seek His help. And by His guidance, we will come to know what to do. So then Arjuna turned to Krishna. And he said, "Krishna, I surrender to you. Please help me. Karpanya dosho pahata swabhava. I'm overcome by weakness." And here the dynamics change. Krishna and Arjuna, they were friends, but now Krishna becomes a teacher. Arjuna becomes the student. And Krishna immediately becomes grave. But initially, seeing the sudden change in the dynamics of the relationship, Krishna smiles. But knowing that a disciple, a teacher, a spiritual master should not laugh at the problems of a disciple, Krishna restrains his smile. The disciple is already in a great state of misery and agony, and to have someone laugh at one's problem, that situation could be morale shattering. And Krishna restrains himself. Then Krishna starts speaking. Initially, Krishna just speaks at the level of pep talk. "Oh, Arjuna, you are a kshatriya, you are arya, why are you acting like a shudra, why are you are acting like a important person, klaibya. So Krishna goads Arjuna. Now Arjuna, you lived like a eunuch for so many years, for such a long time, for over a year, and has your living like a eunuch made you into a real eunuch? How can you run away from a battlefield like this? This is a dangerous situation and a dangerous, it is a hour of crisis. And actually in the hour of crisis, those who are tough people, they become tougher, not weaker. So how is it, Arjuna, you are becoming weaker? Give up this weakness. But then Arjuna speaks and he says, Krishna, this is not weak-mindedness. Actually, I'm being compassionate, I'm being sensitive. How can I fight against my elders? How can I shoot arrows at those people to whom I should be offering flowers? And he speaks like this. They understand that the problem is much deeper. And after this, Arjuna surrenders and Krishna starts speaking. And Krishna takes each of Arjuna's arguments and answers them. So first he takes the argument of compassion. He says, you think that you are going to kill your loved ones? But don't you know, Arjuna, that the soul is immortal? The soul will never die. The body is just like a dress. And this dress has to be given away sooner or later. You can't avoid it. Do you think that if you don't fight and kill your relatives, they will never die? Arjuna gets a doubt. But even if they are eternal, but their death, will it not cause pain to them? Will it not cause pain to me? So he says, yes, but actually to live in this world, one has to tolerate. And moreover, remember, the soul cannot be destroyed by any weapons. And Arjuna starts thinking, but will it be destroyed by the celestial weapons which I got from the Swarga? They can cause destruction of a scale which is not done by ordinary weapons. He says, no, even that cannot destroy the soul because the soul is indestructible. So the soul is indestructible, death is inevitable. So why, out of ignorance, should you give up your duty to avoid that, to try to avoid that which is inevitable and to fear the destruction of that which is indestructible? And he consoles him and he says, yes, the soul is difficult to understand, but remember it. But understand it based on your knowledge and do your duty. It's actually your loved ones. Now they are going to die. After they die, they will get a better body because they have done virtuous activities, and whatever bad activities they have done, like such as this, Drona and Bhishma remain silent when Draupadi has been disturbed, they'll get reactions for that. But afterwards, and that reaction will be in the form of death for them, but afterwards they will get elevated bodies. Either they will get bodies in the heavens based on their punya, or they may even get liberated and go back to the spiritual world. In fact, because of dying in Krishna's presence, that's what they will do. So there is no need to lament. Then he turns towards Arjuna's argument about enjoyment. How will I enjoy? So Krishna says, actually, if you don't do your duty, it is then that you will not enjoy. You will suffer in this life and the next life. How is that? He says that actually, if you fight and lose, if you don't fight, then you will lose and people will laugh at you. The reputation that you have got as a great heroic warrior, it will lost completely, utterly. You'll be humiliated. All those who respected you, they will scorn you. They will laugh at you, and such humiliation will be worse than death for you. On the other hand, if you fight, even if you die in the fight, you will attain heavens and you will attain prosperity and enjoyment over there. And of course, if you win, you will get the earth. So what Arjuna had thought was a lose-lose situation. All three situations, he says, win-win. If you die, you get the heavens. If you win, you get the earth. And if you don't fight at all, then you get infamy. So fighting is the best option for you. And then Krishna goes deeper and then he addresses Arjuna's argument about, but what about fear of sinful reactions? He says, till now the Bhagavad Gita's message is moving deeper and deeper. And the message now was, he says, actually, don't fight with the aim of gaining heaven or gaining the world. Fight for the sake of duty. So actually, this message will become deeper. It will be the message of Karma Yoga. And the message is, fight for purification. Fight for realization. And if you have a material motive for doing your work, then you get material reaction. If you only have a spiritual motive for doing your work, then you get no reaction. And in that way, if you live throughout this life, then whatever you are doing, you will become liberated. And Arjuna gets the question. You will attain peace and you will get liberated. Arjuna gets the question. What is this person who is liberated or is in the path of liberation like? Now, normally when we talk about people who are enlightened, the normal images of a person who is in the forest with maybe a long beard, a serene look on the face, a sage or a seer. So Arjuna is thinking, is that the kind of person who is going to attain liberation, who is fixed in knowledge, wisdom, enlightenment? So he asks, please tell. So he's thinking, what sort of action should I do by which I will become enlightened? Should we be fighting the war or not fighting the war? And Krishna tells Arjuna that such a person rejects all external desires and seeks happiness within and strictly controls the senses. And the way to control the senses is to fix the mind on me. Now the Bhagavad Gita is a book within the book of the Mahabharata. And within the Bhagavad Gita, now in 2.61, Krishna shifts his position. Not just the teacher of sense control, he now reveals himself as the object of the control senses. And this is how a glimpse of bhakti is given. And this glimpse will become clearer and sweeter as we move forward. And then in the next section, as Krishna describes characteristics of a enlightened person, he says, how such an enlightened person, by rejecting all external desires, stays peaceful. Now, by the third chapter, Arjuna gets a question. He's saying that if being peaceful is the goal, and by enlightenment one gets peace, then why are you engaging me in this ghastly warfare? Please tell me clearly, do you want me to fight, or do you want me to act in knowledge? Or do you want me to get in bondage? So, Krishna replies, actually, Arjuna, there's no need to be confused. There are different levels and there are instructions for people at different levels. And he says, for some people, renouncing the world may be good, but renouncing itself doesn't lead to perfection. What leads to perfection is purification. And you have to purify yourself, Arjuna. And for you, the best way to do purification is by doing your prescribed duty. By that, you will also maintain the social order. And by that, you will also be able to attain, eventually the supreme destination. Then he talks about the cycle of cosmic sacrifices in which we contribute through our duty. And then he gives examples of great kings like Janaka in the past who have attained perfection by doing their duties. He tells how Krishna, Arjuna, you know, although I have no duty and I am not bound, still I act to set an example for others. So therefore, know that as a leader, you have a social responsibility. If you renounce duty, you may even have the capacity, if you think that you are pure enough, you may have the purity required to renounce, but others will not have and they will imitate you, and that will cause disruption of society. So here, Krishna turns around and defeats the third argument of Arjuna, the fourth argument of Arjuna. He's talking about social disruption because of society not having any protectors. So Krishna tells that don't think protectors are simply in terms of the physical presence of the protectors. Protectors also in terms of whether they are setting the right example. Because it's one thing to protect others by being a guard, by providing national security, state security. But actually our enemy is also within. And if the leaders set a bad example, then the enemy within gets strength. And the enemy within will also act wrongly. So Arjuna, if you act in a way that people perceive as weak and cowardly, people will give in to their lower nature. And then, when people in mass give in to their lower nature, that will cause big disruption in society. So Arjuna, abandoning your duty will cause the dreaded result that you want to avoid, social disruption. And therefore, stick to your duty. Have faith in my words. And you will eventually attain liberation. And there is the Varnashram. Different people have different duties in Varnashram. And one should do one's prescribed duty. Every duty has some difficulty in it, but don't get bogged down by the difficulty, keep continuing doing your duties. And then Arjuna gets a question at this time, that second question, in this third chapter that Krishna, Arjuna is asking. He says, yes, but there is some force which seems to drag people away from duty, away from virtue, towards sin. What is that force? Oh Krishna, can you please tell me? And Krishna tells, it is lust. So this second chapter and the third chapter, 2.54 to 72 and then 3.36 to 43, these are sections which talk about the inner life and the inner mastery that a seeker should achieve. And he tells that lust actually resides in the senses, the mind and the intelligence. And one just to get purified, first by inner regulation, first by outer regulation, and then by inner devotion, by situating oneself on the spiritual platform. And then Krishna tells, actually don't think that I'm just telling you all this to make you fight this war. This is what I'm giving you is eternal knowledge. It has been there right from the beginning of creation. I gave it to the sun god when the world became manifest, and since then it is coming down in dynasty. It is lost because of the power of time, and now I am giving it to you once again. So this is the first time Krishna directly proclaims his position. Of course, it's not direct till now. He's not saying that I am God, but the very fact that he is giving the knowledge to Sun God, that indicated his position extraordinary. So although Arjuna knows that Krishna is God, but at this particular point, he is covered by the Lord's potency, Yoga Maya. And by being covered by Yoga Maya, he asks, he wants to participate in the Lord's mission of enlightening the world. And to enlighten the world, one important aspect is to enlighten the world about Lord's position. And so to clarify that position also, he asks Krishna the question. So actually, is Arjuna bewildered when he is thinking that I'll not fight the war? We have to understand it both ways. At one level, yes, the arguments that Arjuna is speaking are thoughtful arguments, but they're not very deep-sided arguments. They are not really based on a deep understanding of the soul, of Atma, and of the Paradharma of the Atma. So, in terms of the content of those arguments, they are a sign of a person who is, as Krishna has told, in 2.11, a person who speaks learned words but does not behave learnedly. So one whose words are high sounding but the emotions are not yet educated. So he speaks this. So in terms of the content of his words, there is some illusion, but we have to understand the intent is to serve the Lord. And because he has a desire to serve the Lord, he is perfectly situated. And whatever questions are appropriate for enlightening people, those questions come from Arjuna. And as those questions come along, so Arjuna's position is understood both ways. One way is that we see through his behavior the kind of attachment and illusion that we may get into, and we try to avoid that. But another way, we see Arjuna's soft-heartedness, Arjuna's compassionate nature, Arjuna's capacity for thinking long term before taking actions, his capacity to give up, his willingness to give up material gains and to live a life of abnegation and renunciation just so as to avoid causing harm to others. So all these are qualities of a person who is ripe and receptive for spiritual knowledge. These are the qualities of a student, of a very good student, an excellent candidate for learning Gita wisdom. So there is our consciousness, overall consciousness. There are the specific emotions or thoughts which keep going in our consciousness. So, the specific argument that Krishna is coming up, Arjuna is coming up, they are not sound, but the sensitivity, the thoughtfulness, and the whole cultured, considerate attitude that is underlying these arguments, that is laudable. And this, so even through the, although in the Bhagavad Gita it appears as if Arjuna has been illusioned, but we understand even in this situation of being illusioned or perplexed, we see Arjuna's glory being manifested. That Arjuna is not just ready to act based on considerations of personal gain. Although for him, the gain in terms of the war, victory in the war, would be enormous. So the thoughtfulness which should underlie the actions of a seeker, of a serious speaker, in fact, of any serious human being, they are demonstrated in Arjuna. So here we see Arjuna's glory manifested through his deep thoughtfulness, and the thoughtfulness which led to the revelation of the wisdom of the Gita for the benefit of the whole world. What happened in that conversation further, we'll discuss in our next sessions. Thank you. Hare Krishna.